Mini episode 1902 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1902. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris coming at you here today with one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, our guy, Derek Allen, coming in to talk about NFL Championship Sunday, one of my truly favorite days on the calendar. And as I always make a little bit of, I suppose, maybe the elitist sort of preface to this segment here, but like Super Bowl Sunday, you know, you might be going to Super Bowl parties where there's some people there. They don't know if the football's stuffed or blown up. And we'll kind of, you know, make comments like, why do they do this on some of the most basic kind of stuff. But Championship Sunday, it's for, as AEW owner Tony Khan might say, the true sickos, the people who really love football. And Championship Sunday, I am a little bit sort of dubious of what the opener is going to be this week here. But, you know, we'll talk about that in some detail. But Derek, good as always to get you on. Thank you for being here today. And again, Championship Sunday is a day that I know you look forward to every year as I do.
Oh yeah, 100%. I would say this is probably the least thrilling championship weekend in a few years, just with everything going on between, you know, how dominant obviously Seattle looks, and then obviously Broncos being, you know, quarterbackless, or rather they have Jared Stidham, but basically quarterback list. So but you know, when you go into it with low expectations, it just means there's a lot of room to be surprised. So
it does. It does indeed. And I like to at least try to remember as we get going here on the segments they got you on for to remember to try to get in, you know, plugs here. And of course, always go out and check out, of course, How I Met Derek in the first place, through his better half. You can find her at Chaotic Goodest on X. The great Maya Master, again, one of the great emerging brains of the 2020s here. And then, of course, you know, as you've pointed out also, Derek, your own Twitter feed here as well with Dude Cav. I think it's got the underscore in it. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Dude underscore Cav, I believe. And so, and as I frequently make the joke here, I'm being a cavalry guy, me being a Cleveland Cavaliers guy. We both have a lot of fondness for the word, but for different reasons. But as far as everything goes, looking back at this past weekend, anything that really kind of jumped to your mind? There was some surprises that I had. It's funny because I really kind of wavered back and forth between Denver and Buffalo in particular. I was originally going to pick Denver, and then I kind of overthought it. And I was like, you know what? The Bills are just like the turd that you can't flush. Like, I was making a strong case in my mind for Denver, but I'm like, Buffalo is just going to annoy me if I do that and find a way to get through. And they almost kind of did. And then I got to say the New England-Houston game really surprised me. Not least of which because I didn't expect a whole lot out of C.J. Stroud, but I had such confidence in Houston going in. They were my preseason pick to win the AFC. They were my pick at the beginning of the playoffs to win the AFC. So I had a little bit more surprises on that side of the bracket, I would say. What were you thinking, any of your kind of takeaways from last weekend heading into this weekend?
Oh, yeah. I mean, other than Seattle, I went, you know, I missed every single pick. After going, you know, 6-for-6 wild card weekend, the infamous wild card parlay hit again the second time in 5 years. So that was good. But yeah, going into it, I mean, I kind of the same thing as you. I really saw the Bills being able to move past Denver. I really saw Denver as like a, you know, a false prophet going into it. And we saw it with the game. The Bills shot themselves in the foot five times. Like, it was just, they really had, they were the better team. They just made every mistake, but they, you know, it rolls the way it rolls. You had that weird call at the end, but I mean, other than that, and then obviously the Bo Nix injury just kind of just completely ruined all of the significance of that game. Maybe Jared Stidham will do something miraculous against New England, but I really doubt it. The Bears game, the Bears were also my pick there, and that was another one where it looked like it was going to be another storybook ending. They've been doing these storybook endings the entire year. That last second throw was the probably the greatest throw I've seen in a very long time. Probably the only things that could compare maybe are some of those Hail Marys Rodgers used to do that back in 2015, that stretch there where he was just, it's all he did was have these crazy Hail Marys. But yeah, the Bears, I think they could have done something against Seattle, but you know, is what it is. And then outside of that, yeah, I was kind of same kind of thought as you. I thought Houston would overwhelm. I thought that defense, I thought that pass rush would overwhelm May. It would really throw them off. But for every second they were able to do anything defensively, that Houston offense just couldn't do anything. The regression CJ Stroud's had since his rookie year is absolutely, I just don't get it. He looked like the next rising star, and then it's just gotten worse and worse every year. So those are kind of some of the biggest things I walked away with the games going.
By the way, and I got to tell you this, just because the delusions of local media and local fan bases are a never-ending source of hilarity to me. And living on America's North Coast, I have ample opportunity to see this all the time, that there was some media narrative that was getting put up that ended up being on this one show, and I saw a clip of it where they were talking about this, and like some kind of bogus narrative that like Houston might offer CJ Stroud to the Browns for the 6th overall pick, and the hosts on this show were like, we wouldn't do that. And it's like, wait a minute, like what would make anybody think that deal would be proffered in the first place here? You know what I mean? Like, I just the very notion that CJ Stroud could still command the 6th pick in the draft, you know, denial's a hell of a drug. But yeah, his regression has been real, and it has been spectacular, unfortunately for them. And again, they did do, you know, you were talking about them overwhelming New England. That's the weird ass thing, is that they really did to a degree here. And then, you know, it certainly wasn't May's finest hour getting through that game, but they made it through nonetheless.
No, 100%. I was pretty low on Houston going into the playoffs, but I was, you know, the whole defense wins championships bits stuck in my head. And I thought maybe they would figure it, maybe they'd get the offense going, but with just, it's just, they have a lot to figure out over there. Their defense is obviously world-class, but I mean, I don't know what they're doing on the other side of the ball. Like, it's just insane.
Yeah, they got to figure that out. And then the LA-Chicago game Sunday night, I mean, I think it more or less went the way that I was expecting. I thought that the Rams were probably the best team coming into the postseason here, so I expected them to find a way in that game. Again, McVay kind of shooting himself in the foot by not really establishing the run a little bit more. I'd heard on one of these gambling-oriented radio shows Saturday, I think it was maybe Saturday afternoon. Those are the ones, too, any of those nationally syndicated shows where you can always get, like, the most hardcore X's and O's stuff. Like, I know that you're probably, like, way more into the wagering stuff than I am, but it's like those are great shows. Whether or not you're actually putting money down or not, you really learn stuff. And they were talking about this, like, look for Corum to get used a lot more because he can attack the Bears and more of their weaknesses. Guess what? It didn't happen. So McVay kind of got away with one there as far as the way that he kind of played out the game. And he admitted afterwards it wasn't his finest hour from a coaching perspective. And then from Williams on the other side of the field here for the Bears, again, you kind of get the good, the bad, and the ugly from him. Yeah. And the good and even the great was certainly there in evidence in that touchdown pass. And I'm sure you've probably seen it by now, but anybody out there that hasn't seen the end zone view of that, it is one of the great pieces of footage that you'll ever see in your life. And a very, very memorable moment in time The way that it played out there, yeah, it's interesting because to me, it would have made the NFC Championship game a little bit more anticlimactic had it been the Bears, because I'm not sure I would have seen them standing up to Seattle and seeing it as this sort of epic, you know, battle of the Titans that I see the Rams and the Seahawks as. Would you have seen the Bears and the Seahawks as being more so along those lines?
Good question. I think just from a momentum standpoint, yes. I think the Bears, if they had closed that game out and won, I think just the momentum they would have had going into Seattle, I think they just would have had. I think that could have carried them at least to keep it close. Like LA, I think I see them. I mean, they're going, you know, it's a rubber match, so we'll see what happens. But, you know, LA barely squeaked away with that win, obviously. And, you know, they're playing a team they've seen twice. And it's just, I don't know. I think Seattle just has looked too dominant so far with just obviously their, you know, the Niners game. I don't think it'll be a blowout like that. I still think it'll be a manageable game, but I think it'll kind of follow a similar trend the way the Pats Houston game went. I think Seattle will be in control most of the time. I don't see LA being able to, unless McVay has some magic plan, but I mean, he's not gonna, I don't see him out coaching, you know, McDonald right now.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. So we've already got your bottom line for that one. We'll circle back around to the NFC Championship game. The AFC Championship game, rematch of, I think, like 10 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, or 11 years ago. Yeah. It was a 2015 season, I think, with Denver and New England at the time. And a little bit of a gap between as far as the historical resume of the quarterbacks in that one. And in this one, that was the last Manning-Brady battle for the AFC Championship versus this one here, Jared Stidham versus Drake May, who is, again, having an MVP-type season, but only in his second year in the league. So he has yet to really establish the kind of track record over a period of time. But a guy who's looking like he's going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback if he stays healthy. What's interesting is that, again, let's talk about this because you mentioned it already with Stidham coming in for Denver, the whole anticlimactic thing of Denver loses Bo Nix. And, you know, that's the kind of thing where, I mean, my first thought on something like this, you know, maybe it's the wrestling fan in me, but it's like, you know, can we have a match on AEW Dynamite on Wednesday night between two wrestlers here? Their team replaces Denver in the AFC Championship. Can we do it that way? Because there's a part of it that's like, oh, this is like when the Jets pulled that fluke win on the Patriots. They beat the crap out of them, but it was still a fluke. If ever there was like a 45-3 game that was a fluke, it was that one. I think it was in 09, and they're playing the Steelers. I'm like, oh, great, the Squealers get to go to the Super Bowl without having to face the Patriots, who they cannot demonstrably beat in the playoffs. Never could during that whole stretch of time there. Yeah. So I'm having flashbacks to that. Like, oh, great, great, it's wasting my time here. But when you think about it a little bit more, and I mean, I'm not necessarily going to start, you know, going to the whole card, well, Jeff Hostetler did it, Nick Foles did it, but there's less of a gap between Bo Nix and Jared Stidham than there would be if it was other quarterbacks here. Because Bo Nix, again, at his very best, was a guy who was something where, and I want to establish this with you too, because I don't know, we don't always, all of us have the same definition of game manager, but to me, a game manager, it's not that it's, you know, Kevin Stefanski's platonic ideal that Dylan Gabriel can dink and dunk a team down the field. We tend to think of it stylistically. Game managers still have to make throws. Bo Nix made some throws this year. There's nobody that doesn't have to make throws at one point in time or another. But a game manager is somebody that won't lose you the game. That's how I take the kind of broad definition of it. Not that they're never called upon to make throws. Even a game manager will have to from time to time. But the way I look at it is, again, Bo Nix was, you know, a high-level game manager this year. You have Stidham going in. He's going to have to do it against a tough New England defense, yes. But, I mean, not completely unprecedented for a quarterback with the kind of defense that he's going to have to get it done here. I'm not really talking myself into Denver. I'm certainly not talking myself into Denver winning the game. I think it can be a relatively close game depending on the circumstances. But talk to me about that, the whole notion of a game manager and what you expect out of them here in a game like this.
Yeah, I mean, you read my mind with where my kind of thoughts have been going into the game. I think with Denver's defense and what we saw Houston, obviously Denver and Houston aren't on the same level, but clearly a good defense can put pressure on this Patriots offense. So I think Houston, I think if Denver's defense plays well and Stidham, as you said, as a game manager, is able to basically not lose the game, and he, you know, gets the ball down the field, makes the throws he needs to throw. They can keep it competitive and maybe even win. It's not the craziest thing in the world. Am I picking Denver outright? No. If it's a pretty favorable line, will I bet on them? 100%. I think 100, if it's a pretty lopsided line, I'll absolutely throw a Hail Mary at Denver, because like you said, if Stidham can manage the game and that defense can, you know, get a takeaway, get in May's face a few times, then I think they absolutely have a shot. Now, after that, who knows? But in this game in particular, because from the get-go, I've seen New England and Denver as sort of false prophets. Like, neither, I know May is having this Super Bowl type or MVP, obviously caliber season, but I just haven't really seen it overall with New England. But anyway, long-winded answer to say I'm basically in agreement with you on the game manager piece.
No, I'm glad to hear your thought process for this. And I'm bringing up on the screen here for anybody checking the video version of this here, our 2025-26 FDH NFL end of regular season breakdown. And I will say, again, as the guy who has curated the statistical formula here, I can do a little bit of a victory dance here as far as what it has shown on both sides here. You have the top two teams in the league with the statistical formula in terms of Seattle and LA. They are 1-2. Then you've got, as far as representing in the AFC here, while they are both behind Houston and Jacksonville relatively narrowly, Denver and New England on that second tier. And what's noteworthy to me in looking at this is when you see how the offenses measure up, and the whole notion that like Bo Nix basically was good enough during the regular season. You've got a team that was 15th in OSRS, 15th in offensive yards per play, 10th on third down offense. New England, with Drake May, unsurprisingly much better, 8th in OSRS, 2nd in offensive yards per play, and 6th in third down offense. So you've got a situation where that gap is only going to expand, obviously, with Denver having the backup quarterback in there. Now, there's going to be some smart marks out there that might be like, well, there's not really any film on Stidham as far as, you know, his tendencies or whatever. However, as I'm sure folks have heard discussed, where did he come up initially in his development in New England, in their system? And so again, they've got a lot of internal book on him as far as what they saw of him through the early course of his development. Now he's in a Sean Payton system. Things are a little bit different, but they know what the Sean Payton system looks like. They know what it looks like to have Bo Nix be a game manager, and they're going to see this guy basically in there in that role. So it's one of those things where I think the notion that some might have of like, well, they don't have any tape of him in the Denver system, I think that's one of the stupidest talking points I've heard in the course of this.
Yeah, that's not gonna matter.
Right.
Yeah, but no, I mean, looking back at the breakdown again, it is I'm and the predictions, you know, almost the Houston Jacksonville's ride, like high ride, was a little much. I think that when we did our predictions before this, I've vehemently disagreed on those two, and it was largely right. Though obviously Houston got at least to the divisional, so.
They did. And again, I will say in looking at this that, again, that Buffalo Denver game really could have gone either way. And it was a thing where, again, Buffalo really kind of shooting themselves in the foot. And it was one of those deals where the way that McDermott was out there, like after the game, screaming about the refs, that was one of the things where clearly he knew the kind of jeopardy that his job was in. And he turned out to be right about that. You can always really tell the desperation and the flop sweat the more that certain coaches are talking about how they got screwed out of winning a game. But that was one where Ultimately, yeah, I mean, Denver got through. It was a thing where I think a lot of us were thinking that it was kind of pointless that they did get through. And looking at this, I guess that my game prediction is not necessarily going to deviate from what my original thoughts were on this. I don't think it's going to be any kind of a blowout by any stretch of the imagination. I think Denver's going to struggle to move the football, and I think it is one where New England is going to be able to win. Not in a blowout, but relatively comfortably. I'm going to say New England 23, Denver 10. So I'm going to take New England and the under in this one here. And I think it's going to be one where they are able to advance to the Super Bowl. And again, them doing it either way brings up a very interesting rematch from the 2010s and also potentially the 2000s if it's the Rams here. There's something uncanny about if we get a third Patriots-Rams match here. Or a second one with them. Yes, that would be very memorable, giving them a second chance. And I'm sure we won't be lacking for any pregame commercials of Marshawn Lynch, wanting to get a second chance in life or something like that here. If with this being the matchup of the teams, if it turns out
with Charbonnet out, sign him, bring him back.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is the year of that, right? We've seen it with Philip Rivers. There was some speculation this week about what about Cam Newton to the Broncos? Like, who might be out there? Who might be available? And for all that people want to talk about with that, like, go just sign this guy. Like, I think there's a lot more merit and I think a lot more logic to doing what they're doing here under the circumstances. Yeah. Like sometimes in life, you're just screwed. Sometimes you got to play the hand that you have, and there's not going to be anybody that you're going to bring in that's going to be any better prepared than this guy is. It's going to have any better sort of command of the system. But it's just to think that like you're automatically going to have a much higher ceiling with somebody that's had a higher ceiling and more success in the past, I think is delusional for what you can do on 1 week's worth of work here. So I've got New England making it through to the Super Bowl, and I can tell that you're in accord on that one.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so it'll be New England getting through. Now, from what you tipped off about the late game here, we may not agree on the late game, but I'm going to bring up the deal again here on the screen for those that are checking the video version of the podcast. And this is one of the great things that we've been able to do as far as incorporating this in. I'm actually even going to blow this up a little bit here, since all we really need to be looking at are the top two teams here on the list, and very, very, very close in a number of categories here. And as far as, again, Seattle showing up with only 37 points. And this is a system where, again, based on rankings, you want the least number of points of anybody. That's how you do the best. And the LA Rams at 52, still a world of difference between them and Houston, who was in third place with 91. Now, looking at this here, primarily the difference comes in, primarily so, because it's a 15-point difference between the teams. And the only real significant gap is on defensive yards per play, Seattle being second and the Rams being 12th. So, again, this is a thing where, I mean, the fact that they're 12th in that, 5th in DSRS, it's not exactly, oh, the Rams are bend but don't break defense. Now, that's not exactly the case here, but it is a thing where you can move the ball on them a little bit more. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're allowing more in the way of points or anything like that. That's the primary difference between them. I will say also, too, something we really didn't talk about yet with the AFC Championship game, but in looking ahead to a Super Bowl matchup between New England and either of these teams, both of these teams very fugazi as far as having glass jaws. It's part of why I picked against both of them to make it to this point. Denver 28th in strength of schedule, New England 32nd. Seattle was 7th, the LA Rams 3rd. I'm guessing that you, Derek, can guess who the number one team. I'm going to take away the thing here. I'm guessing that you know who the number one team in strength of schedule that they played is, right?
Arizona.
That would be, yes. Yes, it's the other team in that division. So,
yeah.
Yeah, but these two teams, I mean, they've been through the wars. They are battle-tested in a way that neither New England nor Denver is. This, to me, this is a real heavyweight matchup here, and maybe not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but I will risk it. This, to me, is essentially the real Super Bowl in this game here. Whoever wins this game is a team that I will be looking at very, very strongly to win Super Bowl 60. Your thoughts on this matchup?
I don't see it the same way. I really see this one almost. You know what? I'm kind of talking myself more into that. The AFC game is more compelling than this one. I just really see.
Okay.
I just really think. I think we're looking too much at the other two games they played against each other that were close. But you know, those were pretty early in the season, and when they played, I think it was what week. Like 7, they played the second time, and week 3 was where the Rams lost, and they were both close. But I mean, that's middle of the season, early season. Seattle has just been on a tear in this kind of, you know, twilight of the season going, obviously not even just including playoffs, looking at the last just few weeks of the season. And you know, LA's been has limped through these playoffs so far. I mean, shoot, Carolina almost beat them. In a like, I mean, that was not a cakewalk for them. It started that way, but then, you know, they kind of, I don't know what it is about Carolina that somehow has their number, but they beat them, and then they you know, almost did it again. And then they barely eked by against the Bears, which we talked about, like, yeah, there were some miraculous things that were happened. But I mean, when someone throws three picks, it's, you're winning in overtime, it's not a great look. So I think LA just has not looked like the dominant force they kind of started the season as, versus Seattle is absolutely still that dominant force that they ended the season as. So I think Seattle not quite runs away with it, but I think it's, you know, I'd say like a 28-17 type score.
Interesting. And I can't believe that I'm the guy making this case of all people, because I'm the guy, the original Sam Darnold apologist, desperately wanted the Browns to take him in the 2018 draft, blamed the bad teams that he was on for ruining him. I think I was proven right about that. And again, I've been the bitter clinger that this guy always had something special in him. And I think we've seen it over the course of the last 2 years. I've referred to him as the Jim Plunkett of this era. All that being said, that up against what the Rams offense is with Stafford, with him, and again, if this was 1998 baseball, boy, would we be arching an eyebrow at Matt Stafford having his best year ever now. But he is, and this Rams offense just looks unstoppable. The Seattle offense just lost Zach Charbonnet in there. So it's one of those things where, again, defensively, yes, I give it to Seattle. The Rams have had a very good defense this year, and it's going to be enough to get Chris Shula a head coaching job somewhere. As a sentimentalist, I would like to have seen it with the Dolphins, but I guess that wasn't to be. He'll be somewhere head coaching next year. But Seattle has been, again, defensively, a very, very, very dominant team. I think maybe comparable with the Legion of Boom, which was one of the great all-time defenses. And again, it's one of the things that's in your favor here, as you and I appear to be disagreeing on this, is that I saw a stat that Championship Sunday or Super Bowl, when the best offense in the league statistically plays the best defense in the best defense is 7-1 against the best offense. So you've got an awful lot arguing for you in that way there. But I mean, talk about the role of the respective offenses in this, because you've talked about a lot about the Seattle defense. And again, now maybe there's just some of it that maybe you just feel that the Rams are a little bit too much in the doldrums recently here. But as far as what they're capable of rolling out, again, they were the top rated offense in the league this year. And if the Rams are coming in at their best offensively, which we'll see if they are or they aren't, I ascribe some of their difficulties Sunday night, A, to Sean McVay not exploiting the matchups well enough, and B, to, look, they were playing in the bitter cold. And that's a thing where, like, you know, we normally think of teams like that as folding up under those circumstances. They still won the game. Now, it's not going to be any warmer probably Sunday night in Seattle, but talk about that, the role of the respective offenses and how you see that playing out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, just partly too, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if this was reported at all, but I remember it during the game. Stafford definitely hurt his hand in that game. So I don't think
he came in a little dinged up, I think. Yeah.
So that's not helping. Like, okay. I think we're going to get a banged up Stafford, but I mean, even if I'm on either screen, I'm looking at LA's schedule. If you look at every time they played a top tier defense, that they didn't score much. When they played Houston, they only put up 2 touchdowns. You know, in that obviously first Seattle game, it was a bit of a barn burner, but you know, the other one was they only put up 3 touchdowns. So it's I don't know. I just it's more the eyeball test, but I do think that Seattle offense seems to be clicking more. I don't think the Charbonnet departure is going to be detrimental. Kenneth Walker was still the starter. They guess, you know, it'd be like if the Lions had lost Montgomery. Yeah, it would cause an effect. But, I mean, Gibbs is still one of the best running backs in the league. Now, Walker isn't having that statistically, but when you just look at how their running game plays, it's really good. And then when you – I mean, they're pretty equal too. I mean, obviously, Devontae Adams is still, you know, one of the best receivers just in terms of what – you know, what he's able to do with Stafford. But on the other side, you have JSN, who's continually just can catch everything, can catch, you know, seems like he gets 50 receptions a game. Like it's so when you look at, you know, they both have a pretty good wide receiver. They both have a pretty good running back combo. Obviously Sharp's out, but they had a pretty good running back combo. So I mean, and then you have Darnold versus Stafford. You have a banged up Stafford, but versus a Darnold that, you know, is still kind of on the uprise. So I think they're pretty close offensively, but I still would hand it to Seattle.
Okay. And this is one of those things in looking at this too, the guy who appears to be the next man up as far as spelling Walker would be Cam Akers. So there's sort of some delicious historical tidbits to that as well. I mean, if Cam Akers comes in and is able to make any kind of a difference Sunday night, you know, the lip readers are going to be honing in on Sean McVay, because at some point he's going to say, where was that when we needed it? So, yeah, if it ends up being being the case. And again, they're going to go to somebody to spell Walker to a decent degree. And Akers at this point is, if nothing else, exceedingly well rested. So he'll have that going for him. But I'm looking at this. I see this as being about a middle of the pack game scoring wise. I'll say the Rams to win this one 24-19. And the 19 being on a failed 2-point attempt by Seattle. So you were saying Seattle probably somewhere about in the ballpark of like 28-17 or so.
Yeah.
So both of us seem to be envisioning more or less the same type of game, but with different teams winning.
Yeah.
So that would be set up again in my telling of this, a Rams Patriots Super Bowl for the third time. In your telling of it, it would be the Seahawks and the Patriots. So as far as who the Patriots would be facing, whether it be the Rams or the Seahawks, it would not be the first time in this. It would be one of a rematch of one of the most famous endings in Super Bowl history. As far as if it was Patriots and Seahawks versus Patriots Rams, it would be a chance for the Rams to get over the hump for the first time here after shockingly losing in the 0-1 season with the greatest show on turf, and slightly less shockingly losing. And I think it was the 2018 season when essentially Todd Gurley was more or less getting around on a walker at that point here. And the Rams, in this case, arguably didn't even belong in the Super Bowl as a result of that horrible pass interference call that wasn't called in the New Orleans NFC Championship game. So that either way, by us picking the Patriots, we are looking at a rematch in the Super Bowl, but with a markedly different cast of characters here. Sean McVay with the Rams would represent some continuity on the one side. There really wouldn't be a lot of continuity on the other side, other than Vrabel was probably still a position coach, I think, maybe linebackers coach in the 2010s with the Patriots, I'm thinking. So. Yeah. He may have been there for the previous, for at least the Seahawks Super Bowl. He wouldn't have been there for the Rams Super Bowl, because he would have been in Tennessee by that point. But, yeah, I mean, history is going to have some echoes here one way or another, Derek. With us picking the Patriots to win on the AFC side, we are going to get a matchup of the teams, even if the faces and the figures are going to be a lot different.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting either way. And, again, we're assuming, obviously, the Patriots win. Denver against either of those teams would be an interesting storyline as well. I mean, obviously, Sean Payton has not been to a Super Bowl. And, well, actually, it'd be even going back to what you referenced with that L.A. and the missed call, an L.A.-Denver Super Bowl would be – there'd be a lot of fun there with kind of, you know, Sean Payton possibly getting his revenge.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. And then also a chance for Denver to get their revenge on Seattle for that absolute ass whipping in the Super Bowl where they played. The only combo here that we haven't seen in a Super Bowl before is Broncos Rams. So there's the chance for that. I think they have both played on the same championship Sunday before. I want to say for the 89 season. I think that the Rams made it that far against San Francisco, and it ended up being Broncos 49ers. I'm not sure if I'm remembering that correctly or not, but they've never played on the final stage. I don't think they're going to this time. I'm not sure I would have picked them to be there even if Bo Nix was healthy, just because, again, I had not picked Denver to make the Super Bowl in any instance here. But, Denver and New England, the two glass jaws here with the weak schedules. You've got the teams that have been through the wars on the NFC side in the late game here. A lot to look forward to this weekend. I would say probably especially in the late game. And I'm very, very glad it played out this way. I mean, if Seattle-LA was the first game, I think the late game might have been a little bit anticlimactic, especially if New England started pulling away. But any remaining thoughts for this weekend with you, Derek, that we didn't get to yet?
Do you see a world where anyone but either, depending on how it shakes out, any of the quarterbacks would, besides the quarterbacks, would end up Super Bowl MVP? Like, I don't know what would happen. What would have to happen in the game for it to be anyone other than any of the four?
Here's what I would say is that because there's still a little bit of media, I won't say negativity, but to use the interpersonal term, negging. The media is kind of negging on Sam Darnold here a little bit. I mean, even if he has a lot of passing yards in a Super Bowl and a couple touchdown throws, I mean, if two or three of them go to JSN, I could see him getting it because it won't be like, wow. How could you pass over Sam Darnold? Versus I wouldn't say the same for Stafford. I wouldn't say the same for May. I think the media gives Stafford or May the benefit of the doubt because they're two of the strongest regular season NFL MVP candidates. JSN, if we were in a world where wide receivers were taken seriously for that award, this is something I've covered on the show previously, he'd be right there. Oh, by the way, so would Puka Nacua as well, but Nacua's got Stafford, so that's going to be a thing where the benefit of the doubt's going to go to Stafford. I just think, again, I'm a fatalist on this here with Darnold because myself and fellow FDH Lounge original dignitary Chris Galloway, we were beating the drum for Sam Darnold back in 2018, but there weren't necessarily a whole lot of other people that were. I mean, nobody was really hating on him, but there wasn't a strong consensus in that class. I mean, everybody will tell you now, it should have been Josh Allen. Why wasn't it? Because I think he passed for like 54% at Wyoming. I think that was his percentage. Completion percentage, like he figured it out at the pro level, as did to whatever degree Lamar Jackson, who still has yet to really produce well in the playoffs, but it's rare to figure it out on that level, right? It's kind of like I was kind of busting the balls of our dignitary Joe Stazak in 2016 with Ben Simmons, and I was like, and I actually thought Ben Simmons was going to work out, but I was like, gee, Joe, he'll figure it out as far as shooting at the NBA level. Famous last words. Wow, I think I jinxed the guy, right? So it's one of those things where Darnold, you know, 2020 in hindsight will tell you these other guys should have gone ahead of him. Neither of those other guys is still playing right now, by the way. But you know, I've just seen the media hating on him so much over the course of his career and really blaming him instead of the bad teams that he was on that did so little to help develop at the pro level. You seem surprised when I said that it could be JSN instead of him. That's interesting that I surprised you with that.
Mainly because I'm still bitter about what was it, the Rams Bengals one where Stafford obviously was the Super Bowl MVP, because I picked Aaron Donald, and I still to this day do think it should have been Aaron Donald in that game. But I mean, for the, you know, the storybook stuff, yeah, Stafford makes the most sense. But that was kind of, I was more just saying, if Aaron Donald didn't win it, Matt, I don't see a world where, and I agree with you that receivers just aren't looked at to ever win any sort of big awards ever. So I mean, JSN would have to have like five touchdowns and like some ridiculous stat. And even if that happened, I still think they would give it to Darnold unless he all has multiple picks, but yeah. And then the outside of that, I was going to ask if any of the coaching firing surprised you.
Yeah, a couple of them did. I wasn't sure that McDermott had done enough to wear out the patience there, although you now hear about the internal things there. And it's one of those things where, again, two things can be right at the same time. His internal critique of their roster was right on the money. Now, I said in the last year or so, I thought that they'd done a relatively masterful job of rebuilding on the fly. Because it's clear they were doing that. They were shedding. But inherent in that is the notion that even if you're rebuilding on the fly, you're probably still not where you were. And if you look at their drafting the last couple of years, I mean, I think McDermott is right to say, you didn't give me as much to work with these last couple of years. I think they might be right to say to him, did you always get the most out of what you did have, especially when one of the things you did have was Josh Allen. The funny thing is what they've gotten better in the last couple of years at is that I thought prior to the last 2 years or so, they were taking the crutch of a lot of these teams with excellent mobile quarterbacks. Like, well, do we really need a good running back? Yes, you do. Yeah, I mean, there's not a team in the league that doesn't need a good running back. And James Cook has become that. And lo and behold, look at what it's done for their defense or for their offense. You know, when they're not trotting out these guys from Skid Row like they were the couple of years previously. So I was a little surprised that he wore out his welcome there. The delayed one on Mike McDaniel, I didn't like how that was done. As a Dolphins honk who doesn't like Stephen Ross, I thought that was very low class to have made him think he was safe. And then, psych, you're fired. I didn't like that. The Harbaugh thing surprised me a bit. The Tomlin thing with him, quote unquote, retiring, I guess that kind of did. I mean, not all of these were as obvious as Kevin Stefanski. By the way, the fact that he's one of the first guys to land on his feet to me is nothing short of hilarious. As far as the whole, I just love these narratives like two-time coach of the year. Ray Rhodes was a coach of the year. Brian Daboll was a coach of the year. Like, do we really want to go down this path? You know, so it's kind of hilarious to me. I will say this, didn't surprise me. Jonathan Gannon is gone, but when you look at the onus on getting it right, okay? Your cards are in a division with McDonald, McVay, and Shanahan. No pressure, Derek.
Yeah, I don't know who. I mean, I'm banging the drums for McDermott. I think they're also trying to. I mean, I wanted Saleh too. I think they're also trying. I think they'll make a good shot at Kubiak as well. I think that's the next darling. I think there's. I know they've been interviewing the other LaFleur.
Yes.
So that one's up there. So I don't know who the Cardinals are gonna land. It's probably gonna be whoever, because besides just the fact that it is in the toughest division, it's also that we have the cheapest ownership and everything's terrible. So I don't but in terms of the firings that surprised me, it was really just McDermott, because I thought echoing everything you said. I mean, it was just because he hasn't won a Super Bowl yet. I mean, this year you can, but I don't know how much even that was on him. I think that was just a wild move. Everything else I was largely not surprised by. I was about coin flip on Harbaugh, but it seemed like it was time with just kind of where everything's been. Tomlin wasn't a shocker to me. I think there's not much of a future going on. So I think they were just like, let's just hit the reset. But yeah. And then Gannon, I was actually a little surprised just because I didn't think they would, that Bidwell would be willing to fire someone and keep them on the books. Cause I think we still have Kingsbury on the books. We now we're going to have Gannon on the books. And then we don't know the situation with Kyler. If we trade him, that's a third person on the books. So, I mean, we'll, but I honestly, I think what pushed Bidwell is myself and several, and there's been a whole movement of like, we're done with season tickets till you guys figure this out. So if they make a good coaching hire, I'll consider it, but probably not. But well, it's,
Derek, you know what Jimmy Haslam calls a guy who has to pay two ex-head coaches? A lightweight! Haslam is, I think he's up to like four at this point still. I don't know.
Plus Deshaun.
Plus Deshaun was all these other legacy costs, if you want to call them that. But that's a thing where, I mean, looking at this, the teams that just absolutely have to get it right, you know, certainly, I mean, the Cardinals are one of these teams. The Browns perennially are, but of course they won't. We've been here before. And so, you know, the less said about that, the better. But it's just been really, really interesting. The shoes kept dropping throughout the playoffs. I don't remember the last time a coach in the division round lost his job as McDermott did, but that was that just shows you the jacked up level of expectations that there were there at that point.
I am happy for McDaniel though, not because I know you brought up the Dolphins. No, I agree with you that it was messed up, but I think I've always really liked McDaniels, and I think that I don't know if there's a way to succeed Miami right now, like just with the that roster, and also just being like, I think Miami as a team is just kind of hard to run, and I don't think McDaniels ever was gonna like that. I mean, it's the new Las Vegas. It's just, it's a big party place. I mean, and then it's a recipe for disaster. I don't think McDaniels was ever gonna be the guy to kind of lead that ship. So I'm happy he's free, and he's free of Tua, he's free of Tyreek, and he can go land somewhere else.
Well, him being the OC for the Chargers, I'd heard some people postulating possibly the Lions, but a situation either way where he can go
Cleveland, bring him to Cleveland.
He told them outright that he didn't want any part of that, I guess yesterday as we're taping this here. And what's interesting is this, I hadn't heard this before, but the infamous Mike Shanahan PowerPoint when he quit in, I think, 2014, McDaniel, I guess, helped him put together the PowerPoint. So I wonder if that came up in the first job interview here, that how he helped Mike Shanahan escape the North Coast 12 years ago. But this is a thing where, again, I've always said, I mean, McDaniel, I thought when he got to Miami, I was like, man, this is a guy that's going to win a Super Bowl someday. He's got a brilliant, brilliant mind. Yes. And it's like, and I said recently, like, I don't want him to come to Cleveland because then I'm going to be wrong. Because if he comes to Cleveland, he's going to be like Chris Palmer and you'll never hear from him again. Like, that's, if you get blown out of Miami and then you fail in Cleveland, and people only ever fail spectacularly in Cleveland, he's done. Now, I could still be right. He'll be there. He'll learn under, I don't like Jim Harbaugh at all, but I must admit there are things that he can learn from him. I can hear my dad's voice in my ear. How to cheat, Richard, how to cheat. Well, you know, okay. You know, there are things he can learn that he can take to another job, and where he will be successful down the road. So I think McDaniel made the right move and taking a step back and being an OC rather than just jump into something else. Somebody like Eric Mangini years ago jumped right into Cleveland after the Jets. Imagine that. You worked for the Jets and the Browns back to back. I mean, is it a wonder that this guy's never held another NFL coaching job since then? Like, you know, there's no worse daily double that you could ask for on the planet. Actually, if you're asking me about things that I'm shocked about, Aaron Glenn kept his job. Like, how that happened and how that guy, more so on how he conducted himself. Here, just some of the things that he said to the media and everything like that. Like, I'd always said too, for all the people that were talking about Kevin Stefanski going to the Giants, like, what's the New York media going to do to this guy? Like, I don't know how much you've ever seen of his post game routine, but like, anytime they lose a game, it's on me to do a better job. I have to do a better job. The coaching staff has to do a better job.
Wait, Stefanski? I thought he went to the Falcons.
Stefanski. Well, there was talk about him going to the Giants. He went to the Falcons, but when there was talk about that, I was like, what's the New York media going to do to this guy? He did a lot better going to Atlanta because, to my knowledge, the Atlanta media is nothing like the New York media. But no. When there was talk about that, and, of course, and I got some friends from New York that are Giants fans, and I was just like, they will chew him up and spit him out. Because you can't be doing that.
He'll do well in Atlanta. He'll do well in Atlanta. Once they kind of it sounds like it's good. Like Penix is the guy. Bijan's obviously incredible. I think Atlanta Atlanta's on the up and up. I think the most attractive one still open, though, is probably Vegas, to be honest.
It might be. It might be.
They write their own destiny. This is now we're going way off, but Mendoza to me is absolutely a star.
Yes. Yes, he is. He is. I disagree with FDH senior editor Jason Jones, who anchors our draft coverage. He's not sold on him as a franchise guy. To me, I'm like, and this is the question I'll put to him during our draft season coverage, what more do you want out of a guy? This guy can make every throw. For a guy who's 6'5", he's elusive enough. What can't this guy do? So, yeah, no.
And the mentality. Yeah. That's the biggest thing. He's the most like Brady-like quarterback, at least that way, that I've seen come out. You can maybe throw Purdy in that, but like I'm still a Purdy non-believer. I think he's just in Shanahan's system, but that's a whole other thing.
I think he leveled up this year more than I expected. But as far as Mendoza goes, yes, him being there, I know it wasn't a great year for Genty, but I still think Genty's going to be a star. You have the best tight end in the league and Brock Bowers. So it's like, what, you know, and again, now I was wrong about this. I thought the Raiders had a little more talent on their roster this year. I actually, my most spectacularly poor pick of the year, I, as much as I like to say, well, I picked New England to make the playoffs. I picked Houston to make a strong playoff run. I also picked the Raiders to make the playoffs. They were my sleeper out of the thing here. So you don't win them all. But I just really think that, again, you're right that that is a strong job. Baltimore is a strong job also, I think. You know, I don't like saying that as a Cleveland native, but I must admit that I think it's a pretty strong one. You'll notice I'm not mentioning the Browns anywhere in this.
I don't know who's the worst job, the Browns or the Cardinals.
That is a really good question.
Well, I guess you could argue the Brown just because the cap hell, but like,
yeah, because of a lot of people will say because of the defense, although I strenuously disagree again with Jason Jones when he says best defense in the league. I'm like, no, they're not the best defense in the league. They're very good, but they're not the best defense in the league. And then also, Watson is about to expire in another year. How many years do you guys still have, Murray on the books?
I think this is the last one. The last year of guarantee.
And it's not like Jimmy Haslam being willing to spend endlessly has ever gotten the Browns anything, but at least there's that as opposed to the Bidwells, who remind me, unfortunately, of the Dolans in Major League Baseball and how much I suffer through the tribe every year where they won't let the moths fly out of their wallet. So I feel you on that one. My favorite baseball team goes through the same pain that you go through with your football team. So God help me, I would say probably the Browns are a better job than the Cardinals. I mean, there's one job out there that's worse. Who knew? But and it's one where the Cardinals got to get that one right. Because again, the triumvirate of coaches in that division here. And it's another reason that the Titans better hope that they got it right with Robert Saleh there in Tennessee, is you got Steichen in that division, you got Cohen. And then you got Houston's coach as well here. So it's like, yeah. So, I mean, between the three of those guys, I mean, some of these divisions are really, really, really leveling up in such a huge kind of a way here. So we'll have to see how all of this continues to play out with the coaching carousel. And as was announced when we did our our 19th anniversary show here, going through the top 10 NFL quarterbacks of all time. And thank you for your ballot on that one, Derek. It was discussed on the show along with all of our other ballots here. Announced for the first time, we are coming back NFL Draft Night. Another live stream this year going coast to coast. So if it works out for you schedule-wise, love to have you in that night. But we will be doing it once again, Derek. And, you know, conceivably, likely, we will have a chance to catch up with you about football between now and then. But always great having you on.
Absolutely. Great as always. Thanks.
Thank you so much for being here. It was great, Derek. Thank you. Always appreciated. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1902.